BootlightNetwork.com, episode 206. Visibility for service professionals through educational content marketing. That's a long headline. I know. I could have done a better job. Should have done a better job. But it's part two, hope marketing. Hope marketing. You know, people say hope is not a strategy. But it is. It's not a good one, but it is a strategy. We will wrap this up with part two, visibility for service professionals through educational content marketing. Say all that in one breath. We'll do it next. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell, your host here at BootlightNetwork.com. Thanks for listening. We are about getting new customers, serving existing customers better, and not going crazy in the process. And increasingly, we are about using content marketing for all of the above. So, if that interests you, then welcome. Glad you're here, because it's really all about telling a better story so that we can make more sales, or we can attract more patrons, or get new clients, or get more patients, or... And today it's about service professionals. And if that's not you, then you can still probably, well, there's no probably to it. You can still get some value from today's episode. Guarantee it. Guarantee it. Money back guarantee. Easy to do because there's no money changing hands here today. This is my gift to you, as Seth Godin would call it. It's my gift. Okay, it's the best I can do. So, you know, cut me some slack. Let's dive right in. Teachers don't earn nearly as much as entertainers do. Shocks you, I know. Here in Texas, the average teacher earns, well, they earn just under $50,000 a year. They earn $48,638 a year, to be exact. Snooki, on the other hand, you know Snooki? The reality TV star of MTV's Jersey Shore. I've never seen this show, but I have seen her because, well, you know, how can you not see Snooki? She's in the news. She used to be in the news quite a lot. Earned $150,000 an episode. And according to some reports, namely Celebrity Net Worth, you ever looked at that website? It's pretty interesting. She is worth $4 million. The first season, she earned about $2,000. I think it was $2,200 an episode. The next season, it jumped to $30,000 an episode. And the last season, it was $150,000 an episode. Are you a teacher? When's the last time you got a jump in pay like that? Yeah, try never. And it's not going to happen. Now, it may not be fair that teachers don't earn nearly as much as entertainers, but just welcome to the world that we live in, because people, by and large, will pay big money to be entertained. All the while griping, by the way, about the taxes that they have to pay so that they can send their kids to school. Okay, we'll deal with it. It's how the world works. Best to face it and just let's play by the rules because, well, we don't have the power to change those rules. You can educate and earn nothing. Well, you can educate and earn a little bit. Or you can entertain and you can earn big money. You can really stand out from the crowd. And nobody said that entertainment has to be futile or frivolous. You know, I'm not saying that you got to be Snooki. But how sad is it that in a single episode, Snooki can earn as much as three teachers in the state of Texas? And we're pretty strong, by the way. Here in Texas, we've got pretty good teacher pay. I mean, I went and looked at the list, and I mean, there's some states that, okay, you could talk about cost of living and all that, but I mean, cost of living in Texas is not terribly high. Yeah, we've got pretty high property taxes. We do not have a state income tax. Yeah, it's like the proverbial they, you know, they're going to get it. they say, nah, they're going to get there some way or another. Here, it's property tax. It's not state income tax. But Snooki in a single episode making as much as three teachers. I know it doesn't seem right, but again, it's just how life is. So entertainment doesn't have to be, well, it doesn't have to be as frivolous as Snooki seems to be. Any more than education, by the way, has to be boring. It probably is time for us to combine the two, for you especially, in, you know, this thing that could be called edutainment. And so let's talk about not being boring. And I'm going to give you five guidelines today. And that would have been a much better headline, by the way, don't you think, in a podcast title? But I already had part two. So you know what? I'm going to go back and change that. I've already got the show notes written, kids, but I'm going to go back and edit that. See, this is what you can do. This is how you can learn on the fly. You know, wouldn't this be much better to be, you know, five guidelines. People love lists. I don't know why. Again, here's where I'm at in life. By the way, this is a side note. I'm just going to throw this in for free. Okay, well, it's all free. Well, it's not totally free. It costs me a lot. It costs me plenty. It's free for you. Here's a side note that I'm increasingly coming to grips with and learning, and that is to just accept stuff. You know, why get worked up and just try to buck the system and say, you know, well, this isn't fair. And I know it's not fair. It's not fair that I could go down to the local high school and find any number of teachers, you know, who are making 50 grand and Snooki gets 150K an episode. I know that's not fair. You know, so I can sit here in the yellow studio and I can pine away about that, and that doesn't help anybody. So I think it's best to just, you know, let's just go with it. I don't know why people like lists. Well, I've got some ideas, but it doesn't matter. The fact is they do like lists. And so why not go with it? You know, people can be contrarians and try to fight the system, or, hey, let's just understand that these are kind of the rules of the road. No, nobody wrote the rules. It's just how it worked out. And let's just go with it, shall we? Let's just make the most of it. Man. So let's talk about not being boring. And I'm going to give you five guidelines. And first and foremost, I'm going to start with one that just kind of drives me crazy, because I constantly find myself telling people, service professionals especially, loosen up and lose that language, lose that kind of speak. And it is industry speak. That's tip number one, guideline number one. Nobody cares about your industry's buzzwords. Now, there is an exception to this. And the exception to this is, the exception is if you're speaking exclusively to your industry. I don't have anybody in mind, but there are some people. I tell you who I'm thinking of, and I'll put a link in the show notes because he's got a terrific podcast. I'm not in the target market. The guy is a chiropractor, and I'm not the world's biggest fan of chiropractors, to tell you the truth, but the guy does a terrific job in a podcast. And, you know, it's Spinal Column Radio, and he's a chiropractor, and he's interviewing other chiropractors, and the target market, they're chiropractors. So he is speaking to an industry, and they can talk in kind of industry speak, but that's who he's speaking to. Okay, well, that works in that context. But most service professionals that I know are trying to reach prospects who have no clue about, you know, the inside baseball vocabulary of their industry. Now, I think, as it so turns out, that the doctor doing Spinal Column Radio is building his own practice because, well, he's kind of an industry expert. And so it does serve some purpose even outside his industry circles. But the podcast, by and large, is connectivity with other doctors around the country and talking about not only just the practice of being a chiropractor, that is the health kind of issues, but even some of the business kind of issues. So lose the industry speak. Number two, define terms people may not know. Now, there are some industries that they love acronyms. Acronyms are those words that, well, they're words, but they stand for something, like SCUBA. You may not even know this. SCUBA stands for Self-Contained Underwater Breathing Apparatus. Now, SCUBA is so common that we can say SCUBA and everybody knows what we mean. And that's why I use that example. But man, there are industries that have all kinds of those kinds of things. And we're like, we don't have a clue what that stands for. Now, there are other industries. Well, the field of education. Let's talk about teachers in the field of education. They love abbreviations. I know, because I've got kids who are educators. And I'm regularly tickled by some of the abbreviations that I hear. And I'm like, wait, what? And there was one the other day that my son used, and I tried my best to remember it, and I didn't want to bug him at work. I started to text him and say, okay, what was that thing that you, and it was pretty, a lot of them, in my opinion, are pretty comical because they've got abbreviations for all sorts of funky things, and they just toss them out. They toss them out in conversation. You can be in a conversation or overhear a conversation between two educators, especially if we're dealing with educators, you know, in the public school system, and they just throw these things out and they're just, it's like they're talking in Morse code for the rest of us. It's just, it's kind of comical. Never assume that people know the terms unless they're part of common culture or society. For example, USA. Okay, well, everybody knows we're talking about the United States of America. And if we say it in context, you know, the UK, well, okay, if you're in Kentucky, it could be University of Kentucky, but okay, we mean the United Kingdom. So define the terms that people may not know. Rule of thumb for me is you're always better off just letting people know. You're not going to be insulting anybody by saying United States of America or by saying America instead of saying USA, for instance. Tip number three, don't just recite facts. Man, this can be huge for people. Apply the facts using story. Now, if you go back, especially if you go back to junior high, high school, even college, you likely had a history teacher who just stood up in front of the class and spit out dates and facts and assigned endless, inane chapters to read. And probably tested you on those too, by the way, probably tested you on the dates and the facts of history. And so if you were a good student, you rigorously memorized those things because you knew, well, that's what I got to do to get a good grade on the test. Now, if you were a less rigorous student like myself, you probably did not memorize as many, but once the test was over, you just purge the memory banks. I mean, it's just drivel for you. And so away it goes. And if you were very, 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 very lucky, and I tried to remember a single history teacher, this is sad, but including tons of history classes in college, I don't remember a history teacher like this, but I've heard stories that they do exist. At some point, if you were incredibly lucky, luckier than me, you had a history teacher that told stories. And the dates and the facts, okay, well, that's part of the story. I mean, part of my story includes some dates. There are some, you know, dates of birth, and there are some dates of death even in my life that are kind of part of my story. And this is a date of being married, and those are important facts of the story. But, you know, sometimes they're a much less significant part of the story. I mean, how much does your date of birth, how much does the date that you were married, how much does that tell us who and what you are? No, I mean, very little. So we tend to focus on facts. Service professionals tend to focus on the facts of whatever their craft is. And in many cases, it's a much less significant part of the story than they think. But man, if you were lucky enough to have a history teacher that was a great storyteller and the dates and the facts were just incorporated as part of that story, because they were part of the story, you could remember those things. So be the storytelling history teacher for your industry. Don't just merely be the fact date reciter. That won't earn you any business. Tip number four, don't be afraid to show your personality if you've got one. And if you don't have one, get one. Man, attorneys, financial advisors, medical professionals, and tons of other service professionals tend to be hyper pros, hyper professionals. That is, they've got this image and they are intent on portraying that image. Now, I know where it comes from. It comes from, well, let's just take any of these. They've gone to school. I mean, if you're a medical professional, I mean, come on, you've spent 10 years just trying to gain entry so that you can begin to learn the real stuff. 10 years, a decade. Oh, and hundreds of thousands of dollars. You got a right to be professional. Got a right to feel like a hyper professional. But got this image. I'm a doctor. I'm a whatever. You know, maybe it's the financial advisor who always wears French cuffs. Yeah, I'm going to pick on financial advisor. Always wearing French cuffs and you know, fancy cufflinks. Wouldn't be caught dead in anything else. A hyper pro. Because appearances matter. And he's convinced that he's got to look like $1 million. And if I look like $1 million, people will think I've got $1 million. And people that have $1 million, they'll trust me to handle their finances. Maybe he does have to do that. The problem is it translates into his style and communication, because his hyper-professionalism has convinced him that he also has to sound like the smartest man in every room he enters. Being understood, that's not the objective for him. Being empathetic to his prospects, that's not the important thing. Being smart. Being thought as the smartest guy in the room, that's what matters to him because he's a hyper pro. It won't work. It won't work in content marketing. Now, honestly, I don't think it's the best course to take for building a practice, for building a business, but let's stay focused on content marketing and educating and persuading our prospects so we can earn their business. Man, he's smart. I didn't understand a thing he said. I don't know about you, but that's just not likely to attract quality business or quality clients. There was an old preacher friend of mine, and we were lamenting years ago about, you know, another preacher who would hold forth and, I mean, would just preach for about an hour, which was about twice as long as he should have. And just, you know, at the end of an hour, you could just sit back and you thought, I have no clue what he just said. And the crusty old preacher told me, oh yeah, everybody thinks muddy water's deep. And they do. They do. Ah, it's muddy water. It must be deep. I didn't understand the thing he said. He must be smart. Hopefully we're getting away from that, but maybe not. Maybe not. And it could be because of my knowledge of a prior generation or my generation. I know salespeople, I know marketing people, I know business people who seriously believe that the uninformed buyer is the best kind of buyer. I do. I know people who absolutely positively will tell you that. And I'm not talking about con men. I'm not talking about dishonest men. I'm talking about honest marketers who happen to subscribe to this warped view based on their own training and their own viewpoint, that clients or prospects, in their opinion, well, they're just best kept like mushrooms in the dark. Don't be like that. Don't be like that. I mean, for starters, it's wrongheaded. I don't think it was ever a wise strategy, but it can kill you in today's web-based world. And I bring that up because in so many instances, fear of showing your personality comes through because, well, I want people to think I'm all that and then some. You know, I tell you what it is. It's the age old thing. Never let them see you sweat. But in today's world, aren't we sometimes better off letting people know, hey, guess what? We sweat too. And you do too. And if you didn't sweat, well, you'd die. You likely don't remember a time when you couldn't go online and find out the actual invoice cost of a car. Now, the auto industry wasn't real pleased when Edmunds and some of these, you know, Kelley Blue Book, when some of those publications began to publish the actual invoice cost of automobiles, the auto industry was not happy because they felt like a dumb buyer was a more profitable buyer. In fact, I'll go you one better. They still do. I mean, no wonder people hated. Well, I still hate the car buying experience. It just seemed sleazy. I think it still is very sleazy for the most part. Maybe you do too. There's a reason that many people, even in honorable, well, not that auto sales isn't honorable. It can be. It's not in every case, but that's true of all kinds of selling. I've encountered so many salespeople that don't want to be called salespeople, though. And you know what the analogy is? Yeah, you know. It's always the same. Always the same. It's the stereotypical used car salesman. Well, that translates into new car sales, too. The poor auto industry never learned that there was a better way. You know, to not be afraid to not only show your personality, but just to not be afraid, period. To just trudge forward and try to persuade and educate and, yeah, be entertaining, to let your personality come through. And so when's the last time that you got on any kind of phone support and the person, you felt like the person could even show their personality? I don't know why companies don't let them do this. I realize that they've got scripts and things, and that's fine, script it. So you can't go off script at all. So the person's got to read this rote thing, and everybody's got to read it the same way, and we can't let any personality come through. We are doing businesses with people. If you are a service professional, you are trying to attract prospects. Okay, so you can recite the same facts that the next guy can recite. So why should I pick you? You've got on your French cuffs. He's got his on. That's great and that's wonderful. You got your Hickey Freeman suit on. He's got his Brooks Brothers. Okay, so what? What's different? Is there anything different about you? Well, your personality's different. Like I said, if you've got one, let it show. And if you don't have one, start getting one. Everybody's got one. Okay, yeah, I know. Some people, theirs isn't really great. And here's another sidebar. This is kind of 4B, maybe 4C. You know, use whatever works for you. Some people can come across better on a webcam or a microphone than maybe they can in text. And other people, it's just the opposite. No problem. Do what works for you. Whatever will let your personality show through, go with it. Just don't be afraid to let them see you sweat. You know, is every body going to be attracted to it? Listen, gone are the days of the IBM, and you likely don't remember this, but there was a time where if you worked for IBM, white shirts only, no facial hair. Why? Least offensive. Stats prove that nobody was offended with a white dress shirt. Nobody's offended that you don't have a mustache. You don't have a goatee. But you might offend someone if you don't have on a white shirt. And you might offend someone if you do have a mustache. So we've got to kick that to the curb. Hey, it's the age-old adage. If you're not willing to be hated by some, then you're not going to be loved by anybody. Number 5, the final one, show people. I love storytelling. But one component is often left out by service professionals, and it is among the most important lessons that I have ever learned in training or coaching people, and that includes communicating or persuading people, and that is show me. I've coached all ages of kids, especially in hockey, including some college guys, but there was a time where I spent some time coaching six-year-olds too. You can stand in front of six-year-olds and you can draw some drill on the whiteboard and you look at them and you say, okay, do you guys understand? And to a child, they're all going to acknowledge, yeah, you're going to see a bunch of heads nod. Or if you ask them to raise your hand, if you understand, if they heard you, they're all going to raise their hand, but they don't have a clue. Now, demonstrate the drill in addition to writing it on the whiteboard, and now they see how it goes in real life, and then you ask them again, do you understand now? And they may. In fact, it's going to go up quantum leaps that they do understand to some degree, but they may not fully understand. And so it's that third step that's really critical in both business and in sports and in content marketing, and that is show me. And so now as we, you know, you blow the whistle and you have them begin to do this drill and you quickly realize, no, they don't understand maybe all the nuances of it. And so now you can fix it in real time. Well, hey, it's much like what I decided to do with the headline of today's podcast. I mean, come on, that initial headline, visibility for service professionals through educational content marketing. I mean, that's what part one was called. I'm like, okay, well, that's what part two will be. Nah, that's not, I should have done a better job the first go around. Okay, so just because I screwed up the first go around, I need to screw up the second go around? No. Adjustment. Show me. When we tell people a story to educate them and persuade them, it's a wonderful strategy, but not if they really can't see it. And when I say show me, I'm incorporating that into the content marketing. I'm incorporating that into the story to show them. Well, how can we show them? Well, we can use words and deeper stories. We can use illustrations. There are many people. In fact, well, financial services is one of them. Testimonials are just off limits. Yeah, go figure. I mean, there are some real stodgy rules and regulations for a lot of service professionals. And there are a lot of hoops and hurdles that some of these people have to jump through. And there's all kinds of disclaimers and, you know, go to an attorney website. An attorney just with a blog, you know, has got to put somewhere on there, you know, this is an advertisement. I mean, it's just utterly ridiculous. Well, it's archaic is what it is, but these are the rules and these people must live by these rules. So I'm not encouraging you in any way, shape, or form to violate those rules. Play by those rules. So we can't use testimonials. Well, can we use, you know, could we use stories? Could we tell stories and could we change names? Could we fictionalize the truth so that we could tell a deeper story and more properly, more fully illustrate something? Yes. Now here's the problem. Here's the problem with this fifth thing. Show people. Demonstrate to people, illustrate to people. It takes time. It takes time and it takes some creativity. And it takes overcoming the fear of just doing it. No, I'm not advising any attorney, for instance, or a doctor or any medical professional or any financial. I'm not advising anybody, you know, well, Randy Cantrell. No. But we can tell a deeper story and we can use the facts and we can craft a story that illustrates and demonstrates our point that pertain perhaps to some financial strategy, some health issue, some legal issue. And we can tell a story to demonstrate and to show off that story so that people can get some greater sense of it, just like we can help six-year-old kids better understand a hockey drill because we show them and then we have them show us. Now, that's a coaching scenario, but the message holds true when we're creating content. for us to show them so that they can gain a deeper understanding. Listen, we want people to see what we want them to see, don't we? I mean, that's why we're doing it. That's why we're creating this content, to educate them, to show them. We want them to see what we see. That's what teaching's all about. Frankly, it's what selling is all about. But we want to help them feel. We want to help them feel what we want them to feel. Well, what do you want them to feel? Now, there are a lot of people that will say, well, fear-based selling is really bad. Well, I got news for you. Fear-based selling has been a terrific resource in, for instance, helping get to the point where breast cancer is no longer just, it's a foregone conclusion. It's terminal. No, it's not. Why? Well, for starters, there have been huge medical advancements, but also early detection. Lots and lots of early detection. Well, how did that happen? Yeah, because finally the medical community decided, you know, we're going to scare these women to take care of themselves and to make this a priority in their life for themselves, their husbands, their loved ones, their family, and make them aware of this. Don't be afraid of finding something. Be afraid of not finding something. Well, what are you trying to help your clients or your prospects feel? We need to give them this visceral stuff that they can hang on to, because guess what? Long after they've read your blog post, long after they've hit the stop button on their MP3 player or their iPhone and listened to your podcast, long after they've seen the little video you put up, they're onto somebody else's content. It's that visceral stuff. It's that emotional stuff. It's that, this is what I remember. This is how it made me feel. You've got to give them something to remember and something to talk about. Now, that's not hope strategy. It's hope strategy only in the sense that we've got these objectives and these goals that we hope to accomplish, and we're doing everything possible to accomplish those things. It's not hope in the sense that it's just your random luck that we're going to attract the kind of people we need to attract so that we can build growing, thriving practices, businesses, organizations, communities, you fill in the blank. Because these things apply to you. I don't care if you're a service professional or not. Yeah, it's specifically for them, but these are applicable to all of us. So there's five. I could have probably come up with more. Five's enough, though, because we've gone over half an hour already. BulaNetwork.com is the website. Bula, by the way, of teaching and explanation, Bula is a Fiji term. You may or may not have known that, because you may think, Bula, what does Bula mean? Bula means, well, it means hello and goodbye. Yeah, it's analogous to aloha in Hawaiian. It also means life. In particular, life is good. I think it is. I found the term, I don't know, 35 years ago. Thought it was cool. Started using it. Seemed fitting to name the company Bula Network. So the website is BulaNetwork.com. I hope you'll subscribe to the podcast. The show notes, by the way, can be found at BulaNetwork.com/. I went brain dead on the episode number, 206. BulaNetwork.com/206. Right below the episode, you'll see links to iTunes, Stitcher Radio, maybe non-iTunes, an RSS feed if you choose. I hope you'll subscribe. I hope you'll go over to iTunes and write me a glowing review. That'd be great. I don't know why, but, you know, podcasters, we need validation. You know, we need to know that people love us. I want to be Snooki. Well, I need to be thinner. Sorry, Snooki, but 150,000 an episode. $150,000 an episode. So if I did an episode a week, is that possible? $600,000 a month? Dream big, okay? Dream big and go for it. Tell a better story. Make more sales. Get more clients. All that cool stuff. You can reach me by email, by the way. Results@BulaNetwork.com. Results, because that's what I'm after, at BulaNetwork.com. Again, Randy Cantrell, Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. This is the Yellow Studio.